We'll call the meeting to order, and we apologize for being late. But we had an extended session that we didn't expect to go this long. So we're going to go and get into testimony right away, and we'll just go with the agenda as it sits. So if Mr. Luger or anyone else that's going to be speaking with him would want to come up to the committee table, we'd be welcome you to the committee. And is Mr. Hauer going to be coming also? Thank you. And any other, just the two of you then?
And Mr. Chair Ellen is still coming.
Okay. And Ms. Resman, all of you, welcome to the committee. And I don't know which order you're going to speak in, but why don't you just identify yourself just for the tape and begin your testimony then, whoever wants to start.
Welcome.
Thank you. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Okay. I have leave to speak.
Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is John Luger. I have received services and aid from RISE. Back in the summer of 98, I made a very foolish decision. I started experimenting with mood-altering substances in any way it affect my ability to hold a job. I, needless to say, it resulted in a fiasco, and I had to come back home, start over again, live with my parents. Anyway, because I was unable to work on account of my mental illness, I have obsessive compulsive disorder. I had to get services and aid and rehabilitation, and that is where RISE stepped in to help me. They helped me get the counseling and services that I needed and rehabilitation to help get a job again. And on account of their help and aid, I have been able to maintain a job. I am currently working right now, and I have been working for this place for over 2 years and 7 months. The business has confidence in me, and they like having me there, and they use and treat me very well, and I enjoy working for them very much. They are all very good to me. There are so many people out there that want to work, and amongst them there are people who have mental illnesses, but they are not able to work because they have not received the rehabilitation that they need to get that, in order to get back into the workforce, and it is very sad. I know, because I was one of them. On account of my mental illness, I was unable to work. It probably exacerbated my depression all the more, and it was an enormous blow to my pride. Rehabilitation is a very, very important thing for people, you know, who have mental illnesses, who want to go back to work, and it cannot be neglected. And one of the things that really bothers me, specifically as a taxpayer, is that our government, both state and federal, principally what I'm talking about now, our state government, spends our taxpayer dollars on very frivolous things, such as, you know, the case of prison inmates. They'll make sure that a prison inmate has the opportunity to get a college education and internet services and exercise equipment, but it is cutting funding, you know, for necessary things such as job rehabilitation for people who need it, because it does not have the money to spend on job rehabilitation for people who need it. And I think that that is just, as a taxpayer, as it's my taxpayer money, I find that to be very unacceptable. I think our government needs to, when it comes to examining the spending of the taxpayer's money, it needs to focus on needs and wants. And in the case of job rehabilitation services, such as RISE is a need, which cannot be neglected or ignored. It is a very important part of our community for our people. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you very much, Mr. Luger. Mr. Haller, why don't you just go right ahead? And just in case there are any questions, you know, you can just stick around and go ahead, Mr. Luger.
Okay. My name's Jeff Haller. I live in Roseville. I work at Department of Agriculture for 5 years. In 2001, I worked with a placement specialist through the Minnesota Workforce Center in Blaine. I received a job in December of 2001 and was given a support consultant through Goodwill Easter Seals. Since 2001, Goodwill has helped me keep my job and has helped me move up into different positions within the USDA. The support consultant has helped me to understand the workplace and to understand how to work with numerous other people. Also, he has helped me with my interviewing skills, problem solving, and with looking into schooling in order to advance even more at my workplace. Lastly, he has helped me with my confidence and with listening to me when I am feeling down. Since I started working in 2001, I have been able to afford many things. I was able to move out on my own, own a condo in June of 2003, and recently was able to afford a vehicle of my own. Also, since I've been working, I have been able to afford everyday items like food, clothing, and live independently. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Haller. Why don't you just stick around in case there are any questions, and we'll let Ms. Resman go next.
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Ellen M. Resman. I used to work at a hotel in the housekeeping department for 14 years, but I had problems a lot at work. And I had to call NEC the Minnesota Employment Center many times to help me out. From 1995 all the way until 2005. They helped me a lot. They were my support when things weren't working. Sometimes if I wasn't doing the right things at work, they would come and help. But my job was really stressful and hard for me. And at one point, it just got to be too much. I got very upset and frustrated. And I had a bad day where I really lost my temper. And I left work that day and told my boss. My boss said that I couldn't work there that day anymore because I'd lost my temper, and he told me to go home. So I did. And then later my supervisor wanted to meet with me. And I had to go to my boss's office. And I had to have my boss there and human resources. They had to come too. And my boss, Nasser, called MEC to come in with me too. And Caitlin came in with me, who's a worker from the Minnesota Employment Center, and she was there for that meeting where we could talk about what went wrong. And I found out that because of what I had done and because I lost my temper, that I wasn't going to be able to work in housekeeping anymore. I guess one of the things I said was that I was too loud in the hallway, or that I was banging on the wall, and they didn't like that too. So that some of the things I had done weren't appropriate for that job. So I left that job. I was suspended, and then MEC had to help me. I mean, they drove me home that day. I had to wait through my suspension. And then I had to go back in, and they had a whole written thing about what had happened, and they had told me they were going to have to let me go. So Nasser, my boss, and MEC, and Sherry let me know that I wasn't going to be able to work anymore, and that I wasn't going to have be able to, that I was fired from that job. But what I was able to do was ask MEC to help. So I did the first file for unemployment, and MEC helped me with that, and then I could, and then, and then they really helped me find another job. It took a long time. It was really hard to find a job. There were a lot of different places that we looked. So Caitlin finally helped me find a place to work. I'm now at Home Goods. I started out in Oakdale, but then we had some problems with transportation. We didn't have a bus route to Oakdale, so I couldn't stay at that store. And so, but I didn't have to lose my job. I wasn't able to work at Oakdale, but they got me a position in at Home Goods in Harmar, at the Harmar Mall in Roseville. So I can do that one. And so that's 6 months ago in December of 06, or a couple months ago in December of 06 that I started working, and it's working really well. I'm in the stock room, and I'm checking price, putting price tags on things, and doing inventory stuff. And I make sure that everything has the right department number on it, and it's put in the right place in the stock room. So that's the work that I do now. And I make sure that everything is where it is supposed to be, all the sheets, all the towels, all that kind of stuff. So make sure that all the bins are in the right place, too. So that's what I'm doing now, and I also do some cleaning for them and do that. So there are times that I either help other people with the store, too, if they need extra help knowing what to do with something, and I can help my supervisor. I do that if I have to stay before I go at 2 o'clock so I can get on the bus. Yeah, and I guess that's it. What? Okay, hang on just a minute. That's good. Okay. That's it.
Well, we'd like to thank all three of you for your testimony, and I don't know if the any members of the committee have any questions for any of you, I guess I would ask maybe any of you that want to respond if you're happy with the services that you're getting from the set an employment program.
Yes, I'm very happy. I'm really happy to get my job.
Others? Mr. Luger, go ahead.
Thank you. I am very pleased with the services that Rice has given me. I am very pleased with them. They are a very good employment service.
Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for providing some testimony today. It's been good to hear what your stories have been, so I appreciate that you've taken time away from your work today to be able to join us. Mr. Luger, I had a question for you. You said that you have been identified or have OCD. Can you tell me how long ago that was diagnosed or if that was something that you went undiagnosed for a period of time?
I do believe that I was undiagnosed for a certain period of time. It wasn't until March of 1999 that I was finally diagnosed with OCD, but I was diagnosed at that time. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Well, we thank you very much for your testimony, members, and appreciate it, and I believe that your program in the budget, governor's budget request, is going to get some general fund money. It previously had gotten workforce development money, but will now get some general fund money. It's built into the base, so hopefully that program will continue and be sustained. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Wally Hines, Services for the Blind Clients from Edina. Mr. Hines, welcome to the committee, and after you get seated, if you could just identify yourself for the tape and go ahead with your testimony.
Gotcha. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Wally Hines, and yes, I'm a customer of State Services for the Blind. I have been a customer off and on for over almost 30 years now. You know, I'm probably like most Minnesotans for the longest period of time. I was never aware of the fact that there was such a thing as State Services for the Blind. Now, March 30th of 1977, about 1 o'clock in the morning, I was driving home, and I was on Highway 52, about a mile east of St. Joseph, Minnesota. I fell asleep at the wheel. Drove in a median, hit an immovable object. I might have been called a tree hugger, I don't know. I was knocked unconscious, and I didn't wake up till later that afternoon after I'd been in one round of surgery. And when I woke up, I saw nothing but darkness. And the next thing I remember is being in an ambulance going down to University of Minnesota Hospitals, where I had an additional surgery, and this time for the blindness. I was there for a month. At the end of that month of April, I sat across the desk from the neurosurgeon who had operated on me, and with his kindly bedside manner, he said to me, "Paul, you're blind. unless you accept that, you're going to waste a lot of your time and the time of all of the people around you." You know? And if you've ever played baseball, I mean, all of a sudden it was a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You never saw it coming, but by gosh, when that ball popped into the catcher's mitt, he heard it loud and clear. I had just been called out. You know? So my wife and I went home. In the month of May of 1977. That's when I got introduced to State Services for the Blind. I received a counselor, and together with my wife, we sat down and decided that the first thing that I needed to do was to get adjustment to blindness training. So in June, I began the first of 7 months of adjustment to blindness training. You know, how you learn Braille, how you use the cane, and a variety of other things. And I always remember something that one of my instructors said to me one day. It was in typing class. And she pulled me aside and she said, "Wally," she said, "there's something I want to talk to you about." She said, "You may be blind, but you are not handicapped. You have a lovely wife and a 5-month-old daughter. That's beautiful. God has given you talents, and He's asking you to use them now. And the journey back is not going to be easy, but you must understand that even though you're blind, you're not handicapped. And that was the kind of thing that propelled me, you know, when you lost your sight, when you went from time 20/20 vision to being totally and permanently blind, you have no idea what you're going to do with the rest of your life, what's possible and what is not. But for the very first time, I started to think in terms of going back to work as being real. So I went back to my counselor at State Services and I said, I'm going to be going back to work and here's what I need from you. And so the people in the communications center took all of my product brochures and my price list, things like that, all of the information about the products that I sold. By the way, I was in the microfilm business, a very visually oriented technology. And they recorded them for me. So I would sit at home and I would listen to all of those and I would start to embed information about all of those products and memorize prices and things like that, so that by the time I got back ready to go to work, that I was ready to go. And at the end of January, it was 9 months after I'd had my accident, I was back at work. And I worked there for 6 months. Now, the office was in Northeast Minneapolis. I lived in South Minneapolis. Had a little bit of a mobility issue. So one day I sat down with my boss and I said, look, you're asking me to be your state representative for microfilm and micrographic products. I'm totally blind. I don't have a driver's license. Frankly, we can work together, but we're going to have to change the arrangements. And I said, look, I'd like to start my own company. I'll work out of my house. I'll be a sub-dealer for you. Here's the kind of products that I'll sell for you. And I'll sell the supply items, the film and the supply, and maybe some small things like a microfiche reader, things like that. You can bring somebody else on board that can handle the big ticket items for you. And he said, that's a great idea, because I know you'll do well with what we've been able to do up to this point. So I went back to State Services for the blind. And I said to my counselor, I want to start my own company. And without hesitation, my counselor, Cherie Jackson was her name, said to me, well, it's a great idea. How can we help you? How can we help you? Immediate support, positive, from the day one. So I said, I'm going to need some equipment from you. I got a braille writer because I wanted to do customer cards, that kind of thing. What have people bought from me and what quantity, what price did they pay, when did they buy, things like that, So I started out with a telephone and a desk in my basement. My professional attire was a t-shirt, a pair of Bermuda shorts, and a pair of tennis shoes. What a great start, huh? But within a year, I picked up some other dealerships. I was no longer a sub-dealer to my former employer because I had other things. And the similar type thing happened with the new products, the new companies that I was working with. All of their information I brought over to the communications center every time, so that I could learn the products, I could learn the competitive advantages, I could learn to operate them so that I could talk about not simply the salesman, but somebody who could operate these equipment. In fact, part of my sales pitch was this particular product was so simple to operate that even a blind guy could do it, that kind of thing. And I found myself operating this one particular, what at that time was a revolutionary product, national shows and expositions and things like that. Each time that I needed help, I went back to State Services for the Blind, and they were there for me every time. Every time. They have had a dramatic impact on my life, and it's been a very, very positive impact. I wouldn't be here in front of you today talking with you about SSD if I had not been a customer, and I continue to be a customer. I read the newspapers every day, looking for St. John's sports scores all the time because that's where I went to college. And all I do is pick up the telephone and dial. I read the Minneapolis St. Paul papers, and I can read the Wall Street Journal. I can read over 200 newspapers around the country. These are the kinds of things that they do for me and every other blind person in the state of Minnesota. And back in 1996, getting back to my business, in 1996, I became aware of the fact that the computer had software that so it would talk to me. So I went back to State Services for the Blind again. I saw my counselor. It was a different counselor at this point in time. We talked about it, and he said, let's put together a proposal that I can bring to my management to justify your acquiring the computer system and the software from us. We did. And they said, hey, thumbs up. It's a positive thing. All of a sudden, I'm going back, and I'm starting to learn the computer. And it became an integral part of my business. It allowed me to do a lot of things that I had, up to that time, I had to pay other people to do. I became a lot more independent. And back in 1996, when I was learning a computer, I also was made aware of the one of my instructors had said to me, Wally, have you ever played golf? And I said, yeah, why? And she said, well, there's I got some information on a golf league for people with disabilities. It's a place they call a Braemar golf course out in Nevada, if you're interested. Well, I was, and one thing led to another, and I've been playing golf for the last 8-9 years out there. And the great thing about that, for me, of course, is that it's an opportunity to get back doing something that I could do when I could speak. And I just love that game. For me, it's a great analogy about life itself, where you get up every morning and you go to the first tee, and all along those 18 holes that each day of your life, there's some good and there's some bad, and there's always, at the end of that round of golf or the end of your day, there's always something that is good. And that allows you to say, hey, I'm looking forward to tomorrow. And also at that period of time, like many other blind people, after having received so many things through SSB, it became time for me to give back. And so I was appointed by the governor to the State Rehabilitation Council for the Blind. And I served on that council for 7.5 years and chaired some of its committees. I still, even though I'm no longer on the council, I still am on the Communication Center Committee. It's the one unit within State Services for the Blind that I feel so strongly about, and they helped me so much. And it's a magnificent example of an information production unit. A unit where they produce information that is quality, it is accurate, and it is very timely, and it is for all people, whether you're a youngster, a blind student that's grown up reading Braille, and you have all your textbooks converted to Braille, you even have your tests in Braille so that you and your sighted peers can take all the exams at the very same time. You also have the tape recordings of textbooks for college students. You also have Radio Talking Book, a radio reading service for all of the blind and vision impaired in the Minnesota. You have all of these kinds of services. You also have people there that are in leadership positions in national and international organizations. It's had a very positive impact on my life. And I thank you for the opportunity to share it with you today. I also want to say thank you. You know, like most people in this room, I happen to be a taxpayer too. Okay? And every taxpayer, a gentleman alluded earlier, every taxpayer takes a look at the members of this government and this particular committee where finance is a part of your responsibilities, and it's a large burden. Excuse me. I want to thank you for all of the support that you have given to State Services for the Blind over the years, for what you do now, and I would ask you to look positively on the governor's initiation of his funding for this coming year. Thank you very much.
Mr. Hines, thank you very much for some very inspiring testimony. Are there any, and the governor incidentally has put a little extra money in there, and I'm sure that the committee is going to support it wholeheartedly. Are there any questions for Mr. Hines? Representative Mahoney.
Just your handicap.
He probably sees the ball a lot better than you, Representative Mahoney. So.
Depends on the tee time. Right now I'm playing to a 32 handicap. So, with regard to that, I play with other people with disabilities. And I'll tell you, I've played with people playing with one arm. I've played with people on crutches. You know, the fellow that is a regular in the foursome that I continue to play with plays golf from the waist down. From the waist up, he's paralyzed from the waist down. He plays off of a specially designed car. And 2 years ago, we're playing the regulation course at Braemar. It's a challenge. It really is. this guy shoots a 99 and he's playing golf from the waist up. I had to buy dinner for the guy. And believe me, I had shot a 106. I thought I was going to be on the tour. And this guy shoots a 99, you know. So one other comment, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
My story is not unusual and it's not an exception. You have many, many other blind people in this state who have been quite successful after going to State Services for the Blind and receiving. You have one in the House of Representatives, you and I know him, he's a friend of mine, Representative Tory Western. But you also have many blind people that are working throughout the state. Some work for Social Security, some a friend of mine who is the only blind registered nurse in the state of Minnesota who designed and made and administers the cardiac aftercare program in Fairview South Bay. So I can't help but say again, the investment that you make in State Services for the Blind, you have a wonderful return on it. It is a wise investment. Thanks to you.
Mr. Hines, aside from the fact when you changed jobs, have you always held a position and after you started that with back with your company that you were at after the accident and then moved to your basement, etc., have you all? I know there's been times you changed jobs, but basically you've been a taxpaying citizen in that whole time.
When I started my company on July 1st of 1978, I retired on September 30th of 2003. I was self-employed for close to 25 years. I went from being an employee, well, really being an employer of people working for me and things like that. So it's been a wonderful trip. It's been a full ride, you know, and you've played a part in it.
Again, thank you very much. Any other questions? If not, thank you for your testimony. I might not even have to tease Edina anymore, and I do that a lot around here. So.
Smacking on Jeff Michelle, huh?
More after Ron Earhart.
Ron Earhart, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Mr. David Hancox from the Metro Center for Independent Living. Mr. Hancox, there you are, ready to go. And do you have other members that are going to be testifying with you?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We have one substitution. Mary Cootie is with us today. However, Stephen Nelson was not able to join us at the last minute, so we have invited Ingrid Hoffman to join us, if that pleases the committee.
That's fine.
While we're getting settled, Mr. Chair, first of all, thank you for inviting us to be here today, members of the committee. My name, again, is David Hancox. I'm the Executive Director at the Metro Center for Independent Living. And just by way of introduction, I'm not going to take any time because I know I'm not the one you want to hear from today. But I do want to draw the committee's attention to the fact that there is a little handout in your folder today that describes the work of the Centers for Independent Living. There are 8 Centers for Independent Living around the state of Minnesota. Last year we served just under 20,000 individuals across the state of Minnesota. And Mary and Ingrid are 2 of those individuals that have received services here at the Metro Center. So hard as it is for some of the committee members to believe, I'm going to stop talking now. And I'm going to turn to Mary and to Ingrid and let you hear from them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Kubiu, why don't you go start right in.
Good afternoon, everyone. I know you are going to have a problem with my accent, but I will try to make it. I am Mary Kube. I'm a Cameroonian. I come from West Africa. I've been here for almost 3 years. I came here on the 4th of February 2004. I was here for a while. I visited my brother. Then I had some issues with him just within a couple of months. And he sent me out of his house. I didn't know where to go to. So then a center sent me to a shelter. I lived in the shelter for 1 year. I was looking for the job. I went to Minnesota Workforce. They sent me to Goodwill. I was working with Goodwill for about 5 months. I told them I haven't the place to leave. So, Patrick Smith, he was sitting right there, he had just left his place. He introduced me to MCIL. On the 8th of February, 2006, that was just last year. And the first thing I told them, I don't have a place to live. I have no mother, I'm a single parent. I have two boys. They are birthed in my country. And in the shelter, I have to live just for 3 years. That's what I told them. The first thing, I met Sheila, yeah. Sheila told me, Mary, don't worry. We are going to see what we can do about it. They started helping me to apply for housing. They applied, we made a couple of applications. And in April, I had a one-bedroom apartment right here at Wright Street, right on front. I don't know the section. 8 houses for handicapped. And the house is quite comfortable to me. And accessible to me in everything I want to do because I don't drive. I came back to Sheila. I told Sheila, I have a right side weakness since my stroke. I will need some adaptive equipment in the kitchen. Sheila told me again, Mary, don't worry. We know what we can do about it. So they looked for a program to finance it for me. And now I have the equipment right in my kitchen. I'm able to cook easily, although I can be slow, but I'm very satisfied with it. The next problem again, I said, Sheila, transportation. How am I going to get around? Sheila told me, with Laura Bottom, whom I'm working very close with, he told me, we are going to help you. So, they applied for, they told me how to ride the bus. I told them, during rush hours, I will not be able to pay $2 and $1.50 during regular hours. So, they told me, don't worry. And they looked for a means, and my fare came down to 50 cents. I was so happy about it. I said, wow, MCIL, these people are doing so much for me. I'm so happy with you. And I always call them my brothers. Always call them my sisters when I get in there. So I applied for SSI because I can't walk much due to my disability. I was sent down because of the access back in my country. I asked them, how am I going to go about with all this? Then I looked for a lawyer in legal services downtown St. Paul. I worked with the lady for a year. And in November 14th, 2006, if I'm not mistaken, I had to go to the judge. I was asked some questions there. I did my best to explain everything to them. And in a few months, a letter came for me in the mail that they they should grant to the SSI. I called Sheila, the NCIL, I talked to her. I said, wow, that's it. Let's see. Now I am in process for the SSI, and hopefully, maybe, I'm going to get it. And I thank NCIL very much for all what they have been doing for me. And currently, I went to another problem to them again. I said, wow, I like to be getting around now by myself. And Sheila told me, can you talk with Laura? Because I'm working very closely with Laura. I talked with Laura. Laura told me what I have to do to get around. She took me to the University Avenue here, where we got a driver's booklet for me to be studying. So I'm preparing now to go in for the test, and I know I will make it. So when I sit down at times in my one-bedroom apartment, I ask myself, what should I have done if I didn't know NCIL? Because they assist not only me, handicapped people, so many people go there, and they succeed in whatever things they want to do. So I'm so thankful to them, and thankful to those who finance the program, and I hope they will do more for more people to be assisted in the near future. Thank you very much for giving me the floor.
Thank you, Mary, for your testimony. Are there any questions of Mary at all? If not, Mary, your accent was much less harsh than mine. You did a great job. Thank you. And now, Ingrid, why don't you go ahead and give your testimony?
Good afternoon. My name is Ingrid Hoffman. I teach at the University of Minnesota. I teach child psychology. I became involved with MCIL several years ago because I was focused on disability studies for my research project at the university, and I heard about MCIL the first time and started going to investigate the different programs. I started to actually do presentations and workshops there. The irony being, I didn't realize that I could benefit from the services at MCIL. I mean, the more I heard about the different programs, the personal assistant program, everything, I started to realize there's a lot that applied to my life and what I needed, and that I could benefit from the services there. So it is very ironic that I developed PTSD eventually from some issues with the medical care that I was given in the past. And I had to take time off from my position at the university. And I'm thankful to MCIL for what they were able to do for me. They helped me deal with a lot of the paperwork issues that I was having to manage, figuring out who did I need to contact for what services. I have multiple disabilities. And so it's not something for me simply to access one place for my one disability. It's just not the way it works for me. There's not one place that covers all my service needs. So I'm grateful to MCIL, and I have certainly learned a lot about resources that are available for me that I didn't know about because of them. I've gotten a lot of information. I've learned more. I've certainly met other people who have some of these disabilities who accept me for who I am. And I've found support groups. And just really access to the help I need, everything that I need that's out there and what's available, all the resources that are available for me. And without MCIL, I think that I would be in pretty bad shape right now. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much, too, for your testimony. Maybe this question is to Mr. Hancock. I noticed the governor didn't give you an increase like he did the previous program, the previous two programs, the clients for those programs. Did you get a cut when we were cutting everybody a few years back?
Mr. Chair, in 2003, originally in the original governor's budget, we were eliminated. We worked very closely with members of this committee. We worked very closely with folks over at DEED, and we were able to get 70% put back in that same year. Since that time, since 2003, we have steadily seen small increments being added back into our line item. Right now, we're at about 90% of where we were at the 2003 cut. So we haven't been fully restored at this point in time. We're at about 90%.
So the customer number that you talked about, serving 20,000 individuals across the state, has that decreased because of that, or have you managed to
there have been,
do more with less?
Mr. Chair, there have been certainly some impacts to the services, and one of the things that the Centers for Independent Living have done is, you know, we've tried to use our creativity and ingenuity to maintain the continuity of those services, but there have been impacts. There have been fewer numbers served. And each of the centers at one point in time or another have had to lay off staff as a result as well.
Any questions of the witnesses? If not, thank you, all of you, very much. Appreciate your testimony, and we'll certainly try to do what we can for the Center for Independent Living program. Is there a Joey Carlson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, members. In the audience or okay. Do we have a Joe Carlson from Plymouth, a vocational rehab client? If not, John McLaughlin. Mr. McLaughlin, if you want to come down. Just identify yourself for the tape and go right into the testimony. And even though we were late today, we're pretty much on time. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is John McLaughlin. I am the director of the Hennepin Carver Workforce Service Area. And in that role, I staff the Hennepin Carver Workforce Investment Board. And I'm here at the sufferance of the chair and the committee administrator.
Mr. McLaughlin, can yes, I sir. Stop you for a minute? I think Mr. Carlson just walked in. And so, Mr. Carlson, why don't you come up? And I know, Mr. McLaughlin, you can make it back here.
Anytime.
Yeah, I know, that's right. But Mr. Carlson might have trouble. So, Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee. And come on up, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what Vocational Rehabilitation Services has done for you. Welcome to the committee. Sir?
Mr. Chair, if I may, this is Steve Nelson.
Oh, this is
not the other gentleman.
Mr. Nelson, okay.
The gentleman that was originally signed up for us, but I wasn't sure if was going to be able to make it.
Right.
I apologize for inconvenience.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Steve Nelson. I'm a veteran. About 8 years ago, I had a stroke. But anyway, I did go back and retire from the military. But I've been a part of MCIL for a few years. And I tell you, I felt like my life was at a standstill until I got involved with MCIL. MCIL made it available. Like I say, the services that I do get from MCIL is like, I was able to build a computer. And when building this computer, I was, when it comes to technology and stuff, sometimes persons, especially with a disability, is a little intimidating. And so I was able to build the computer, understand how it runs, and it made my life a lot easier because I was able to be connected to the outside world. I don't really get out and do a lot, but it was able for me to be connected. I also received, like, financial education. It taught me how to, more or less manage my money and stuff like that. And what I never really thought about it until, unfortunately, I came on fixed income. And so it gave me those tools. And it's also made it, gave me some tools to live independently. When I say independently, it gave me even some tools to learn how to cook. And those were simple things that I really didn't have to really think about when I was able to get out and be more mobile. But because I was the same person with my disability, but I find myself had to do things different because I'm weak on one arm. Now, when it comes to NCIL, if I did not have those services provided, again, I would be at a standstill and lost in life. I'm just one person that's speaking on the behalf probably of many, many more people that live in this community, especially when it comes to veterans. We feel like it's a little lost for us. We're not getting a lot of the services, but so being a part of MCI really made it impossible for me to feel like I'm mattering in this society again.
Anything I'm leaving out?
I was trying to make a couple notes here, but
I think, if I may, Mr. Chair, I think might interest the committee to know that Mr. Nelson his original referral to MCIL actually came to the VA. And that the Metro Center for Independent Living, as well as several other of the centers around the state of Minnesota, have been developing a relationship with the Veterans Administration and providing services to individuals who are, you know, former members of the armed forces, but also individuals who are coming back recently. And that has become a significant part of many of the centers, a significant part of the consumers that we serve.
Mr. Nelson,
yes, sir.
Did you get any help from the Veterans Affairs after you had your stroke?
Well, I got minimal. Then this is why I say again why MCL came in to be a key part of where I'm at today, because they do contract out to MCIL, because when you go and try to pursue services, the waiting list is so long. And we see this all the time, and like I say, it's just been a burden on our system, unfortunately, because the people that's coming back trying to pursue services. And so, like I say, when I had a chance to, my voc rehab counselor had a chance to refer me to MCIL, it made a difference. You know, it's kind of speeded the process. And so I see many more veterans coming on board and taking advantage of the referral that we have at MCIL.
Well, members, Representative Stevenson, I think you're a former member of the Armed Services. I find it somewhat puzzling that Veterans Affairs is referring veterans, such as Mr. Nelson, to Centers for Independent Living when we cut their budget. Maybe the governor should put a little more money into the Centers for Independent Living. And besides his other veterans' proposals for education, etc., I don't know if you got a comment on it, but you know, everybody's talking about supporting our troops, and unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of our troops that are coming back. They're going to be needing a lot of services, as Mr. Hancock and Nelson alluded to, and it seems sometimes the government forgets about those. Everybody pounds their chest and puts those ribbons on their car, but once they come back here, sometimes they get forgotten about. So I'm a little interested, and I'd like to talk to you further about that, Mr. Hancock, to see what kind of referrals you're getting from Veterans Affairs and what kind of strain that's putting on, you know, the SILs when they've been cut and still aren't back to where they were a few years ago. Any other comments? On that, President Gunther, you look somewhat puzzled, too.
I'm not puzzled. I just, Mr. Hancock, we found some money in the federal government that we could access for SILs. And it's my understanding that money got a little squishy towards the end. Did they withdraw that help that SILs got from the federal government?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, unfortunately, yes, and not, and I want to stress that it's not to the fault of D. They came to us with a very, what we had thought at the time was a very workable solution. And we worked cooperatively with the, essentially for the benefit of the members of the committee. What Mr. Gunther, Representative Gunther, is alluding to is an opportunity for Deed to use a portion of the dollars allocated by yourselves for the Centers for Independent Living to qualify as match for additional federal dollars. The arrangements between the Centers for Independent Living and Deed were to use those dollars for match, to draw down additional federal dollars, and then the centers would receive a portion of that. And that did happen. That process was put into place, and there were a few dollars flowing, and then the federal government got in the way. And the Federal Rehab Services Division felt that they were not fully supportive of that arrangement that we had worked on with Deed, and they kind of pulled the plug on it. So it was not lack of will on Deed's part. It was certainly not lack of will on our part. It was lack of support on the part of the Federal Rehab Services Division. And the concern that we both parties shared here at the state level was that if we continued to pursue that without the support of the federal government, that at some point in time they could come back to reclaim those dollars and we wouldn't have them. So to the point of your question, yes, sir, that was pursued. And for a short amount of time, quite successfully. Unfortunately, it was not sustainable.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hancock, I just noticed that Steele County is not served, and the counties are all around. Is something else serving the same type of services?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's that's a very, very, very good question, and I appreciate that. One of the goals in the current state plan for independent living that's sponsored by the State Independent Living Council, as well as the Centers for Independent Living, is creating our ability to generate the opportunity to have a solid statewide network of services provided by the Centers for Independent Living. Unfortunately, because of current funding levels, centers are fairly limited in their abilities to outreach to the center, to some of the counties. For example, the Metro Center here, we are assigned 9 metro area counties. Hennepin and Ramsey have a pretty strong daily presence for our service delivery. Some of the outlying counties, it's much lesser degree of presence. And I think you would find that to be true with all of the centers, where, you know, the core of where that center is located, those first 2 or 3 immediate counties are very, very well served, but as you move out from that center to the outlying areas of those service areas, it becomes much more difficult to get the services to people, and it's simply a resource issue. So we are working now, the Centers for Independent Living, the State Association, is working with the State Independent Living Council to devise the new 3-year state plan that will, again, further us towards making this a seamless network of services statewide.
Thank you. Representative Bruce moves the minutes of the January 31st meeting. Any additions or corrections? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And we'll end with Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, I was just wondering, when you had the stroke, was it while you were on active duty?
Yes, sir. I'm a reservist, so actually I was on my 2 weeks military training and thought I had the flu, so I didn't really know. I thought I had the flu, diagnosing myself, and so came back, and, you know, I reservist is part-time, so I came back to my job in Northwest Airlines and left work on a stretcher, 5 hospitals, 8 months, brain surgery, learned how to walk, and went back to the military in 99 and retired with 21 years, but and then, like I say, at first I was kind of at a standstill until I got to, you know, kind of being a little persistent about some things that I can do. And so, it was grateful that we had a organization like MCIL that, you know, that it was an out for me, because the line is so long with our system and we just get left out. And so it's been great.
Thank you.
Yes. Go ahead, Rep.
Mr. Chair, to that point, I think the reservists fall under a different issue, particularly if there's something that happens while they're on active duty. There has to be a JAG investigation established that the incident took place while they were on active duty. And that may not have happened in this particular case. Unless that happens, then there is no jurisdiction over the government or the VA. And typically in a reservist situation like that, their entitlements don't start until age 62. So he does not fall under the VA until age 62, even though he is retired off of active duty, off of reserve status.
No. Thank you, Representative Stevenson, for that information. But I did hear Mr. Hancock say, and Mr. Nelson both say, that they're getting a lot of referrals. So I'm assuming you said active people coming back from...
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that some of the referrals that we're receiving are folks that are recent return. Yeah. But, you know, please, I'd like to clarify that one of the... We view our relationship with the VA as being very positive.
And that's, and I didn't take it to be any other way, but I'm just, you know, wondering why Veterans Affairs isn't also doing more. Some question.
It may be a capacity issue, and we can probably look at our own veteran service program. I mean, one of the things we did do a couple of years ago was expand their outreach to people based on a number of things. Post-traumatic stress syndrome, chemical dependency, other kinds of exposures. And, I mean, I know the governor's worked a lot on trying to raise, you know, some of these issues, and I think, you know, I don't know if this committee could, one of us should look at it, see how we're doing, because the mandate is there for that kind of outreach.
Okay. Representative Moe, and we'll wrap up with you, because we've got to get out of this room.
First, thanks for making the time to come and talk to us.
Thank you.
I appreciate your service and your time. I know it's a challenge for you to get here. I just wanted to ask, I'm sorry, I forget the names.
David Hancock.
Mr. Hancock. This is obviously an issue that we're glad that there is some state support currently. However, are there other individuals that are veterans that have similar or other health problems that are potential clients for yours that you're not able to serve? I mean, this seems like a potential huge shortfall on behalf on the part of the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a very good question again. We received word from the Veterans Administration, the federal office, the Veterans Administration, in late November, early December of 2006, just very, very recently, that they were being required to do more in-house. So we were called to a meeting with the new regional manager at the VA here in St. Paul, and it was explained to us that because of directives that were coming from Washington, that they were being instructed to a lot of the independent living services and evaluations and things like that, that they had been coming to us, and a lot of the technology pieces, such as the types that Mr. Nelson received, the technology education and training and et cetera, an orientation, the technology piece in particular was being pulled back, and that the independent living skills and the independent living evaluations, that the Veterans Administration was going to prioritize doing more of that in-house.
That means a waiting list.
I can't speak for the VA. I'm just relaying the message that was given to us by the regional manager. Now, we've made it very clear to them, not only myself, but several other center directors as well, Kara Ruff, who is, represents Representative Severson's district, and I know has a good relationship there. We met with the regional manager, and we made it clear that we would continue to be available based on their ability to do the referrals. But the feeling that we got from the regional manager was that this was a directive that was being imposed upon him. That it wasn't that they did not recognize the value of the services we provide, but that they were receiving the directive from D.C. to pull back, do more in-house. And they told us that as we move through the year, you know, we may see some of the referrals pick up a little bit, but not in the technology area. And I'm sure Mr. Nelson will tell you that one of the keys for communication, for recreation, for employment, et cetera, is that technology base. So I really think that the local VA staff here is very, every bit as frustrated with this as we are. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
Also, we got to get out of the room because the next committee's coming in to be in here. But did you have one final thing to say?
Yes,
Members,
sir.
Hold on just a second. You've got the budgets for the university in front of you that you can take home if you want, because we'll have binders for you on Tuesday when the university comes in. Mr. Nelson, go ahead.
Yes, thanks. I just want to say... unfortunately, our system is really broken at the VA. I give my services there, and a lot of it is case in point, just a gentleman last week, you know what I mean, couldn't get in to get his services, unfortunately took his life. And it's a lot of, as you talk to veterans, it's a lot of And I get awesome service over there, but the system is just overloaded. It's just too much. And just thank you, and I just hope you, when it comes to thinking about MCIL and a lot of other places that we can turn, that can really be considerate.
Thank you again for coming. That members meeting adjourned.